So, what's the difference between a Bob Dylan impression and a Neil Diamond impression?
What? Everything. What isn't the difference between a Bob Dylan
Oh no,
impression
then
and a Neil
you've
Diamond
never done
impression?
both of them professionally.
Dude,
They're actually quite
Bob Dylan and Neil Diamond?
the root of it is like.
Have you ever seen Bob Dylan in a rhinestone deep V cut jumpsuit?
I'm
Nay.
not
The
saying what
answer
they're.
is nay. That
I
is
feel like
how
you're.
different they are as people and as impressions.
I feel like you're misunderstanding. It's the voice. I'm saying the voice is actually. If you talk
No
to.
way. No
Well,
way.
then
It
do
is
them. Do
Bob
them.
Dylan.
Right now.
Maybe
Do it.
Neil Diamond sounds like Bob Dylan if it's Neil Diamond after like being awake for a week straight and then given a sedative.
I'm not saying that they even sound alike. I'm saying that the root of the voices, it's when you talk to an impressionist, they'll often tell you like how they do a voice, and they'll say, "Well, I do this voice and I just do this to it." And sometimes it's crazy because you're like, "How are those two voices related?" And then you realize, "Oh, yeah." And I'm saying Neil Diamond and Bob Dylan are that way. We're coming to America.
Just singing Neil Diamond songs in a Bob Dylan-y voice does
We're
not make them
coming
sing.
to America. Then you do your Neil. What's your Neil Diamond impression? Let me hear it.
I'm unpracticed. I'm not ready for the microphone.
I would.
It's
Did you hang
more
the.
commanding. It's like chesting. We're coming to
To
America.
America. See? Did
It's
you
like it's a
hang
little.
the
It's a.
recording podcast sign on the outside of the
Exactly.
door?
It's a little more. He's a little more news anchory.
Right. And Bob Dylan is the sleepy version of that.
Welcome to the Faith Church Peshtigo podcast. You can connect with us online at faithpeshtigo.com. We're also on Facebook. Just search for Faith Church Peshtigo. Today's podcast features a conversation between Pastor Jay and Pastor Robbie talking about the sermon from October 4th, 2020.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Faith Church podcast. I am your host, J. Neil Diamond Williams.
Is that what people call you?
That's what people call me,
Man.
Robbie.
Oh man. That's.
Because my voice sounds like Neil Diamond. I don't even know. Does that sound like. I don't think I've ever
Has
heard Neil
anyone
Diamond talk.
ever told you that you sound like Neil Diamond? Did you
No.
just say you don't think you've ever heard Neil Diamond talk?
I don't know if I've ever heard
And
him
actually
speak.
speak, right? Only sing?
But I just imagine that he talks like this. That's what I
You're pretty
imagine.
close.
It's pretty close. Hey, so do you remember? I gotta do a follow-up from like a month ago or a couple months ago. We were talking about rodents in our ceilings and whatnot.
Yes, I recall.
Okay, so we had an appearance, a very special appearance by said rodent in the wee hours of the morning a few days ago, and so I don't know if this is the same rodent. I assume that there was one rodent in there, and then it came out to say hi. Somehow got into our bathroom, where our cat was prowling around, one of our cats. And so I woke up,
That
it's
sounds like
still
a
dark.
cartoon waiting to happen.
Well, it turns out that evidently the mouse was going for a swim in the water bowl, which I only know because, there's evidence that the mouse had been in or near the water bowl.
Okay.
If you catch my drift,
Yeah.
if you catch my drift.
Catching.
So what happened was that I just noticed the cat. I heard squeaking, and then I noticed the outline of the cat was kind of stalking back and forth in the bathroom. So I assumed the squeaking was coming from the wall, but it turns out as soon as I saw our cat make a batting motion with its paw and something, outline of something else went skittering across the floor, I thought, oh no, that's actually something. And it turns out it was a mouse, came running out of our bathroom, and our cat cornered it, which was amazing. So you never know how indoor cats are going to respond to things like this,
Okay.
because their lives, they're pretty pampered. They're not
Right,
barn
right.
cats. And most of the people in our church know of outdoor cats, but the indoor ones, they're barely cats. Like
You're living a pretty cushy life.
they're pretty cushy life. And so it was really good to see our one cat, Chief, go after and corner the mouse. Our other cat, the dopey one, Fuzz, got up and we tried to prop him up. He was asleep on our bed and I tried to prop him up and said, go help your sister, go deal with this mouse. And he jumps, he doesn't jump up. He kind of gets up, stretches, yawns, looks over there, hops down off the bed and walks past, looks at the mouse and his sister cornering the mouse, yawns, walks past and goes and gets a drink of water.
That's not helpful. And
it's not at all. He is the worthless cat. He's also the one that causes more damage, so I don't know what to do with him. He just had no interest. We kept putting him in the situation to try to corner and help with the mouse, and he showed little to no interest.
Okay.
But the other one achieved a Medal of Honor. I don't know what you give a feline heart. I don't know. But she cornered the mouse, and then my wife... So here's where it gets good.
Cornered and captured, or just had it cornered?
Cornered. Had it cornered. This is where it gets good. This is where you say, what is the point? Am I, like, if you've skipped past to this point, this is where the story gets good. My wife, I got her, so I did what any self-respecting husband would do. I ran out to the garage and got boots and gloves for my wife to put on to go get the mouse.
It's very courageous of you.
It was. I was a servant heart is what it was. I saw her going in there with bare feet and bare hands, and I thought, how can I help in this situation? I can get you boots and gloves so that you can get the mouse. Chivalry is not dead. And she's so appreciated. I said, honey, here are some boots and gloves for you to put on. And so she did. And my wife, who was born in the city, raised in the city, had lived her entire life in the city until we moved here, she reaches and grabs that mouse and shoves it in a bag and seals the bag and goes out and disposes of the mouse.
Bravo. I believe she's the one who deserves the award.
Well, here's what we discovered. The males in our house are borderline worthless.
Hmm.
And the females in our house are the courageous ones.
Huh.
Because Chief is a girl cat.
Okay. And is the one who cornered the mouse.
Yes.
Okay.
And Fuzz, the worthless one, is the boy cat.
Huh.
The brother. So he and I did not test out well in that time.
Well, perhaps it was the ferocity of the opponent that was the issue. Maybe if it was a more docile, harmless creature, you would have felt more courageous in that moment.
I don't even know what to do with that. I feel like that's ridiculous. I think you should have gone the other way.
Trying to spin it?
No, you spin it the other way. Say, like, if I would have felt like it was more of a threat, then I would have stepped up.
Oh, I'm not that good at spin. Sorry. I tried my best.
Robbie, I'm trying to help you help me. And you're not. So that's what happened. So the mystery's solved. We actually had people look over, and it looks like that was the critter. And now he's gone.
Congratulations on solving that. So that's perhaps not your wheelhouse. You help people in other ways, Jay. Like Sunday. I thought that was a helpful message.
That was such a good transition. Thank you for saving our people.
You're welcome.
That's everyone. So bad I feel like we should... Oh, that's a good lead-in. Because that was not a strong intro.
That's a perfect lead-in to what I was hoping you would talk about a little bit today.
Yeah. So we were talking about this earlier. So this past weekend... What?
It's like that was a perfect lead-in to how I want to talk about how sometimes you're really, really bad at communication, but that's okay.
Right. Yeah, that was you encouraging me and building me up. So, Jay, let's talk about other places you failed. Oh, like last Sunday. So it may shock you that if you teach regularly, like preach regularly, you aren't always super excited about how things go. And that's just a big lesson that you learn as you gain experience that it's not really dependent on you.
Yeah.
But this past Sunday we met inside for the first time, three services, and I just without no excuses, I just ran out of gas in the third service. I almost said the first service. I ran out of gas.
In your defense, we jumped from one service to three services over the course of a week. That's That's right. A pretty big deal. And that's difficult. I don't know about you, but it takes a lot out of me. I mean, especially as an introvert, like that is a lot of extroverted energy to pour out over an extended period of time. And so that takes quite a bit out of me. So I can certainly empathize with running out of gas by the third service.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm an extrovert, so I kind of got lulled into thinking I was fine. Like after the second service, I'm like, I'm fine. I'm in a rhythm. Let's go. And about 5 to 10 minutes into the message, probably 5 minutes, felt like longer, my brain turned to mush, and just things couldn't connect, and I really struggled through it. But here's what's crazy. So I sat down and I shared this during third service. And if you weren't at third service, then you don't know that this happened because we've destroyed all evidence of it. If you were watching it live on this online, or you were here with us in person, are the only ways that you saw me run out of gas. And I went back, I sat down and I thought that was a train wreck. I didn't think it was one of my stronger messages anyway in the first two services, but then I felt like an incoherent mess. And I sat down.
Which is an overstatement. As an observer, I should add a footnote here that says Jay is speaking hyperbolically. Or no, actually not about how you're feeling about it.
No, I felt that way.
You're actually feeling that way, but it was not... It was not the incoherent ramblings of an insane person. To the observer,
fair enough.
It felt quite coherent. But
I like that you said fairly. You started to say fairly. Felt like, you know,
it was. I mean,
C minus. Yeah. It felt, you know. So you're saying it was an F? I don't think so. But so I sit down, and immediately the first thought that pops in my head is that was a train wreck. What in the world were you just doing? And then this week we had you lead corporate prayer afterwards.
Yes.
And the first thing that you said was you were encouraging people to pray, and you asked, what is God saying to you right now? And it was such, like, just that moment. I wasn't thinking about that coming next. I just sat down, and the voice in my head was, that was a train wreck, likely useless. I sure hope nobody was watching that online. Nobody could possibly be helped by this. And you ask that question. I hear that question. What is God saying to you? And a voice came in my head saying, not that. Not the things that you're hearing right now. And I felt the impression of God saying that it's not dependent on you. It is not on your eloquence or your articulation of any of these things. It was a stark reminder that he lets me participate in his work, and just this encouragement and this confidence. And what's interesting is I got as much feedback after that service, encouraging feedback, as I do, which I've come to expect. I've basically just come to expect that the way God works in this with me anyway, is the worse I feel about the message, the more positive feedback I get.
Right.
And the times I feel like I nailed it, I get nothing, or sometimes that's where I get the angry email. And it's almost comical at this point of like, how much more does he need to show me that it is dependent on him, not on my articulation of the topic.
Mm. Man, that's so good. Oh. That's so important. I would like to comment on that, but I have one quick question.
Sure.
Is there a ghost in your office?
Okay, I was wondering if that's getting picked up on right now. It's the ghost of that mouse is what it is.
It sounds that like mouse you have is several haunting cartoon me. Ghosts
yeah.
in your office going, ooh. What is happening in there?
It's a windy day, and my office is in the wind tunnel. I don't know.
Okay. Do you have a window open that can be closed? No, that's just what it is.
I have nothing. Okay. That's the noise of the wind.
I just
out
felt
there,
like so. We need to address that so that
I also need
can
to
acknowledge it and move on.
Right. I need to clarify that the mouse was alive when Lauren released it. So I know I'm going to go home, and when she hears this, she's going to say, I didn't kill the mouse. And yes, I know. You rescued the mouse and released it into the wild.
Good thing. So it is not the mouse that is haunting your office right now. But
I can't imagine that mouse's life expectancy was long. Okay. I think it was injured, and I don't know, whatever. Anyway,
So that's some wind that we have no control over. So
correct.
That's correct. Excellent. Okay. So moving right along,
I
was so encouraged. First of all, that the fact that you shared that you came up and just as part of the benediction, were willing to confess that. I think that's so important to acknowledge that we can feel that we can have that sense of this was not enough. I did not do a good job. I mean, and you might not necessarily articulate it this way, but you can literally feel like, man, I just messed up God's plan. Like I just rendered him powerless in my poor communication of this thing. And the enemy just attacks you on that level, right? I mean, it's so easy for him to just lean into that. He doesn't have to say anything other than yep, 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 and just poke at that sense of self-doubt and self-criticism of like, man, that how could God possibly use that? And then, as you said, like so often, the Spirit responds by saying like this, and then you hear from people of like, this is how it spoke to me, this is how it spoke to me. And I have to wonder in those moments, like, is that really because I messed that up, or is that because in my hopefully by God's grace sensitivity to the Spirit, I feel prompted to say something, but because it's not in my notes and because it doesn't fit in that perfect flow that I created in this sermon, which I say very tongue-in-cheek,
right.
It feels like, oh, I did a bad job communicating this, when actually it's the Spirit saying, you are actually about to do a bad job communicating this, so let me help you out and say what really needs to be said in this moment, because more often than not, those are the things that are most impactful to the hearer.
Yeah, I think you're hitting the nail on the head. And so this is why it's important. So this isn't just about preaching. I mean, this is I've heard so many times from people, this is why we decided, hey, let's talk about this in the podcast. I've heard so many times from people who say, I had an opportunity to share the gospel or to encourage somebody or to disciple somebody, and I just feel like I blew it. Mm-hmm. I feel like I messed it up. I said all the wrong things. I stumbled over. I think I did it wrong. And I want people to know you're not alone in that. That's not unique. That's not a unique feeling. That's how anybody who wants to be used by God is going to feel at times. And I think the response, the Christian response, is we want to embrace that. We don't want to run from that, because the reality is that most of the time when I'm judging a sermon on how well I think it went, to my shame, I'm comparing it to how I wanted it to go. Like, did I communicate it the way I wanted to communicate it, the way that I thought about it earlier, the way I wrote about it earlier? And that's the measuring stick, which when you think about it is pretty silly measuring stick.
Yeah.
Like, that's not at all what actually has value. What actually has value is Christ being exalted and people responding to that. To Christ, not people walking away thinking, wow, that was a really well articulated sermon.
Right. Paul even goes so far as to say, I intentionally chose not to come to you with well crafted words, but right. just gave you Christ crucified. Like, because I didn't want you to falsely assume it's because I articulated this so well. Which, I mean, the so many ways that we can fall into this trap, right? We can assume, oh man, I was so impacted by that sermon, when really we were impacted by a really clever turn of phrase, which is great. I'm not saying a clever turn of phrase is a bad thing, but if what really excited me was the way that person phrased that thing and not actually the content of what they were saying, if it's not just as impactful, you know, I one person said to me, like, that before they ever lead a song and a worship song, they just read the lyrics, no music, nothing. And if they aren't moved by the lyrics alone, they're not going to lead that song. Because otherwise, all it means is it was a clever melody that's stirring you in that. It's the, you know, it's the drum build, the swell that stirs you. And it's not actually the truth of what's being proclaimed that is stirring you. And so that's not a win. So
Is this a place where I can push back on that?
Do it.
So I think that just goes, though, to our evangelical church's fascination with words. I think it's theology and songs. Obviously, we think that's incredibly important. But I don't want to discredit the intangibles. So, like, passion matters. Like, Paul talks about that. Like, you saw my passion. Like, you know how convinced I am of this. There is something to be said for those, like, so music, swelling, and doing all that is all done to glorify God. Like, we don't want false emotions, but I don't think that they're always just completely mutually exclusive. Does that make sense?
I would never argue that they are mutually exclusive. And not only that, I would also argue, yeah, you're not pushing back, you're stepping into nuance now. So this person's argument is, if it's only the music that is stirring you, mm-hmm. that's not good corporate worship, because you're not actually really participating in that way. That was their argument, it's supposed to be connecting me to a reality. Now, the reason we don't say, therefore, all a cappella, sung in monotone, with no rhythm. Like, the reason we don't go that far is because music itself is a gift from God. There is something extraordinary about the fact that you can listen to a piece of music that doesn't have a single word in it and it can make me cry. Mm-hmm. There's like, that's something that God has placed in us and is something extraordinary that we tap into. That's why we do those swells and we do those things. Their argument was simply that doesn't trump. We don't say, hey, this, the lyrics of this thing are vapid and Christless, but man, that bridge just really pumps me up. Like, if that's the case, then we can be playing Coldplay or Metallica or, like, you know, just what's your favorite music that stirs you up? We can bring in the
it's not Coldplay.
No, I know. Neither of those are here, but the point just being, like, dude, like, their music stirs emotion in you as well, so there has to be something. What is it that makes it congregational worship? And so, yeah, I agree. It can't be one at the exclusion of the other, but it's also understanding, like, what is it that's moving me in this moment? And coming back to, we don't say it's wrong to carefully choose your words. You and I both pour a lot of time and effort into making sure that we're communicating well and accurately. But at the end of the day, if it's my clever way of saying it that moves you, and not the actual truth of who Christ is and what he's done, that's a net loss. That is not a win. It is, which again points back to why it often feels like those moments when we're most, like, stumbling over our words, that somebody feels most impacted by that. Which, and we've joked about, like, when there are some of those sermons that we come up, that we finish up, and someone comes up to us and says, man, that just really moved me. And my knee-jerk response, what I want to say is, no, it didn't. That was terrible. Like, you are wrong. If you were impacted by that, you're doing something wrong, because that was awful. But over time, you and I have both learned that's how the Spirit does some of his best work. And, like, I don't get any of the glory for that. He gets 100% of the glory for that. And that's fantastic.
Well, and that's why it's so important to understand, yes, it's important that we are able to articulate the gospel. And we talk about gospel fluency, and the words that we say matter. But if you are paralyzed in talking to someone, sharing the gospel with someone, for example, if you're paralyzed by a fear that you're not going to articulate it properly, or that it is your articulation, if you feel the weight that it is your articulation or answers to a particular argument that are going to convince someone, then this, you're just way off base.
I'll, like, never do not, it.
You know, you'll never share the gospel, because that's a terrifying thing to put on your shoulders. So, you know, when Paul says that passage that you alluded to, Robbie, is, you know, it's 1 Corinthians 2, and the beginning of 1 Corinthians 2. And Paul says, I'm just going to read it. He says, "And I, when I came to you, brothers, did not come proclaiming to you the testimony of God with lofty speech or wisdom. For I decided to know nothing among you except Christ, Jesus Christ and him crucified. And I was with you in weakness and in fear and much trembling. And my speech and my message were not in plausible words of wisdom, but in demonstration of the Spirit and of power, so that your faith might not rest in the wisdom of men, but in the power of God." I mean, that's, I would encourage people just to let that ring and read that later and just consider that. But
that's
obviously Paul's
well-communicated message, right, about not having to communicate
right,
well.
Right, but here's why, yeah, and exactly. And obviously we know Paul says a lot more than just Jesus Christ and him crucified.
Certainly.
But his point here is that his goal was not to impress them or to convince them intellectually or to win a debate. You know, right. I remember being invited over to a friend's house, Mormons, neighbors of ours. They invited us over basically for practice. It was batting practice for new missionaries that had moved into the area. For them. Like, so they said, "Would you come over? We have new missionaries in the area and we just want them to talk to you." And I said, "Well, that'd be fun." And so they were like 18 or 19 years old, and were terrified because they heard that this Baptist preacher was coming over. And so for them, that meant like, oh gosh, here we go. And I just listened, and I think I asked a few questions. I read a little bit of scripture. But we just had a good conversation. I gently pushed back a little bit, but I was, if you know me at all, you know that I like to argue and I like to debate. And but in this moment, I was definitely what I would consider gentle. And they'd asked me later, this family that we're friends with, they said, "Man, I'm a little surprised that you didn't." I think they were surprised and we were surprised that you were so gentle with them. And I just said, "Well, like, look, I mean, you know what I believe, and I shared the gospel again there, but I said, I don't gain anything by winning a debate with a scared 19-year-old kid. That doesn't exalt Christ at all. What exalts Christ is to love them and to point them to the Jesus of the Bible and to hopefully ask them questions that would make them consider him. But I don't gain anything for the kingdom by just intellectually bullying a 19-year-old kid." And I felt like God was really gracious to me in that time to like just bring that lesson home, to realize that's not our goal. And so that's what Paul's saying. Like Paul is incredibly intelligent, and Paul likely could have destroyed, and he does a couple times. He destroys, and he even talks about taking captive and destroying these arguments and these worldviews. And but it's the power of Christ that does it. And you look at why is that so important? And it's because he doesn't want their faith to be based on his intellect or his charisma. It's got to be based on Christ. And so hopefully that's an encouragement even as you're sharing the gospel, that if you come to people with humility and actually in your weakness, that's far more compelling than when you come at people with prepackaged answers and trying to refute their arguments and trying to defeat them in arguments. That's rarely effective. There are very few people who have been able to do that in a winsome way. Ravi Zacharias, the late Ravi Zacharias, is one of them that you could watch him obliterate someone with an intellectual argument, but do it with the demeanor of a grandfather who just loves their child, right, the grandson.
Right.
It was a gift. It's a very extraordinary gift. But still there, the overriding theme, the thing that was so winsome, was his compassion and his kindness and his respect for people. And so if you have that, if you come at people with that, then you will, you'll be amazed at the fruit that will come out of that, even though you think that you didn't articulate things very well or you didn't answer their question well.
So I don't know if this is helpful or not, but what about, so you alluded to it. So that 2 Corinthians reference of destroying strongholds, right? I mean, it's really we destroy arguments and every lofty opinion raised against the knowledge of God. Mm-hmm. So, how do you respond to the person who hears that and says, "No, you're being soft," and I'm gonna throw out my proof text that says we're supposed to destroy arguments and every opinion that's against the knowledge of God. Maybe Ravi wasn't firm enough in that and was too compassionate. Like, what would be your response to that?
I mean, my first response would be that who is Paul, who is he destroying that for the benefit of? Like, it's the building up of the church. So to me, that's more like we do that. We destroy strongholds and what we would consider to be sinful thinking or wrong thought patterns or philosophies or worldviews that come in and can lead people astray, but it's protecting the flock. Like, we don't, it's benefiting them. And so I don't think what Paul is getting at there, and you can certainly push back against this if you want to. I don't think what Paul's getting at there is that we go out and we destroy the people who hold those worldviews and we destroy them along with it. I think he's saying, like, these worldviews are coming into the church, and so we're preaching and building up and equipping the church, and in doing that, we are going to destroy the idols and the philosophies and the worldviews and the strongholds that would come and would seek to deceive and lead astray the sheep.
Yeah. No, I think that's a great response. I wouldn't push back on that at all. I would in fact double down on that, because that's almost positive. That's the same passage where Paul talks about, and we take every thought captive to obey Christ.
Right.
So as he's talking about destroying arguments and lofty opinions, certainly that would apply to you and I helping each other in that, but it's literally the same sentence. We destroy arguments and every lofty opinion raised against the knowledge of God and take every thought captive to obey Christ. Well, I can't take your thoughts captive.
No.
But I can certainly take my own. So there's a sense of this is an internal battle. This is an in-house battle, not I'm marching down the street dismantling every worldly opinion of people who aren't even seeking Christ, but this is a, like, we war to not allow these worldly opinions to seep into our hearts and the church in order to dismantle it in that sense, but we take those captive and obey Christ.
Yeah, and I think also what's implied in this is, you know, he says we destroy arguments and every lofty opinion raised against the knowledge of God. So there's a lot of different ways to destroy and to dismantle something. That doesn't mean that it's done aggressively or in some kind of condescending way. It just means that you kind of obliterate it, which could be, like, if you think about a Jenga tower, it could be just popping out one little piece that brings the whole thing collapsing down. And it can actually be, it could be, this doesn't mean that it's without gentleness or kindness or respect. I found if it's helpful at all, I mean, I found with people, you know, often when I'm talking with people who are not Christ followers, everybody has a worldview. Like, everybody has some system of thought that they have kind of come to a conclusion that this is how the world works.
Certainly.
There's always some place where they seek comfort. There's always something that they are putting their hope in. There's always something that they desire and that they're pursuing. And there's always something that they're afraid of or trying to protect themselves from or running away from. And I've actually found that just getting people to talk about those and asking them those questions and then to just listen to them and then sometimes to just ask really, really soft questions that I don't even need. My goal in those moments is not to get them to realize in that moment, oh man, I've been so wrong. Sometimes that's happened, But more often, it's more just asking questions of like, so how, basically the version of how is that working? How's that working for you?
Right.
What, like how, right. where have you seen fruit in that?
If it was going to work, it would probably be working by now.
Right. And I just ask that like as I'm on their side, because I am on their side. Because when I'm sharing with somebody, I want them to find hope. I want them to have meaning. I want them to be relieved of their fears. And I want to see their desires, like their true desires fulfilled. I want that for them. So I'm asking these questions as their ally in that conversation. And more often than not, when you do that, people are really honest about how that is working out. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, you know, often it's not really well. And then you the door is open, as Peter says, to give an answer for the hope that is in you. And I think that's to be able to say like, well, this is why I'm not afraid during this election, or why I'm not afraid of the pandemic, but yet why I function in this way, like why I advocate wearing masks, because the world can only see, well, if you're wearing that, then you must be afraid. And you say, well, no, I cannot be controlled by this thing. I can be motivated by Christ, who compels me to think in this way and to, you know, to function in this way. So, sorry, that was kind of long-winded of saying, like, we have to be careful too of what does it even mean to destroy? Because by just asking someone gently from their side as an ally, like, is that working for you? Like, have you found hope in that thing? That could be enough to completely dismantle and destroy the stronghold of some worldview on their heart that has blinded them to the truth of the gospel. You just don't know.
Man, what I love so much about that is in asking that, you're allowing the Holy Spirit to do the work in them rather than me trying to force that work upon them by my argumentation. If we can, assuming we can trust the Word of God, then literally the sentence leading up to that verse answers the question, right? Mm-hmm. It says, for though we walk in the flesh, we are not waging war according to the flesh. For the weapons of our warfare are not of the flesh, but of divine power to destroy strongholds. And then it goes on to say, we destroy arguments. So by the time he gets to verse 5 there and talking about destroying arguments, he's already said, but we don't do that by means of the flesh. We don't do that by means of arguments. We don't meet the flesh with the flesh, thinking that's going to defeat it. In the way of Paul elsewhere saying in Romans 12, I think it is, we defeat evil with good, right? We overcome rather evil with good. We don't overcome the flesh with the flesh. We overcome the flesh with the Spirit, which changes our approach, which, circling back around in our proclamation of the gospel, either in our personal lives with people that we're in relationship with or on a Sunday morning from the pulpit, it is not by the flesh that anything of eternal value is accomplished. It is only ever by divine power. And that's emboldening. That's the reason why, knowing there's a good chance that I'm going to botch it up, I can still get up there on a Sunday morning. As anxious as I get, as fearful as I get, it's still public speaking. And according to most recent studies, that's still the number one fear. More people are afraid of public speaking than death. So I feel that every single time I get up, like, it's still very overwhelming, both in a fleshly sense and in the weighty sense of, not only am I speaking publicly, but I am trying to handle the word of the living God in a helpful and accurate way. Like, all of that would be more than enough for me to say, I don't need to ever do that again. But it's this reminder of,
right,
but it's not according to the flesh, it's according to divine power, and he can take my feeblest effort and turn into something extraordinarily profound.
Yeah, and so I hope that people are getting this. I know I said it earlier, but this is not just about preaching. That's the context that this sparked this conversation. But you know, if for parents, as you're instructing your children, or if you're sharing the gospel with your coworker or your neighbor, or you're trying to disciple someone younger in the faith, if you believe that the pressure is on you to say everything correctly and to cover everything thoroughly, then that's just a weight that you can't bear. And Christ has given us an easy yoke. Like the burden is light and the yoke is easy. He's not kidding. He's not lying. He's saying he's carrying the weight. He's the one that does the work. Mm. And just in our love and joy, we get to be like little children who don't have to articulate everything perfectly. Now, of course, we want to, because we want to be helpful, but it's not, you know, God has done so much over the years, not just in preaching, like he's done so much through bad sermons in my life, both the ones that I've preached and ones that I've listened to. He's done so much in conversations over coffee or conversations with my kids, where my weakness has made way for the power of Christ. Mm-hmm. And I think we just shouldn't run away from that. We should not be afraid to say, I don't know. We should not be afraid that that we were too gentle or too kind or too compassionate, and that we got to make sure that we make it really clear what we believe in this area or what we think about this. It just, nobody's ever won over by those. I mean, if you don't believe me, I mean, if you just look at social media, look at Facebook, like how often is anybody's mind changed by just more information from a certain point of view? I mean, we're so good at posting articles that we think, oh, and this says it in the perfect way. Oh, this thing, like if you just read this, then you'd be convinced. Has that ever worked? Ever? It's never. Like it does not matter how articulate the person is. If the person already agreed with you, they think it's amazing. They probably didn't even read it, but they think it's amazing. And the person who doesn't agree with you already thinks it's the dumbest thing they've ever seen, even if they didn't read it.
Yeah.
And the same thing goes for our arguments or anything that you share with somebody. If the Spirit is opening eyes and hearts, then speaking in the Spirit will be received and incredible things will happen. But in the flesh, we can do nothing. Hmm. So there you go. I hope that's encouraging. I feel like that turned discouraging. I meant for it to go encouraging. And then I was like,
You mean ending with you can do nothing?
Yeah, and with the whole like Facebook illustration.
No, I think that's helpful. I think it's very practical. And the good news is, even if that was a really terrible illustration, the Holy Spirit is bigger than that, and it is
so
not
good.
The flesh.
I walked right into that.
But divine power, Jay.
I was not even thinking that. I just walked right into that. I think with my kids. I'll end with this illustration because this is more articulate and will be more convincing. I have taught my kids more about repentance in my weakness than I ever have in my articulate lectures or sermons. And I think we just need to keep that in mind, that the best thing, that's why I shared what I did at the end of the third service. That's why I confessed that and told people that, because I've just learned that God has blessed ministry through me far more through my weakness and my humility and than he has ever in me trying to present that I know exactly what I'm saying at all times and that I'm fully firm in every conclusion and every thought, because I'm not. And I'm trying to figure this out and trying to follow Jesus like everybody else. And when you're sharing the gospel with someone, letting them know that, showing them that you follow Christ in our weakness and not in our strength, mm-hmm. What better testimony can you give to the power of Christ and to his goodness? So
that's a great way to finish. We are grateful for you guys taking the time to listen. We do hope that it is encouraging, and we ask that if you have questions of your own, either just in your own daily study of the Word or coming out of a Sunday sermon, we would love the opportunity to be able to unpack that. So please email those to us, text us. When you bump into us on a Sunday, ask away. We love having an opportunity to be able to continue the discussion from Sunday mornings. We love you, church.